you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Here at the Believe You Me podcast, we want you to have amazing sex. So that is why I want to tell you about a popular sexual enhancer, which is called the Promescent Delay Spray. It has been used by over 1 million men, and it is clinically proven to help you last longer in bed. It takes the edge off, and sensitivity levels are taken down, so you don't have to worry about, you know, finishing too soon. There's no prescriptions, there's no mess, and there's no pesky subscriptions required. You just get better sex, guaranteed, with a 60-day money-back policy, okay? Harrington has used this a lot. It's easy to use. He lasted longer, and it gave him way more confidence. See what the buzz is about for yourself and grab a bottle along with all your sexual wellness products, from specially formulated arousal gels to supplements and more, in one trusted spot that ships fast and discreet. All you got to do is go to promescent.com, P-R-O-M-E-S-C-E-N-T, promescent.com. They have an assortment of products to enhance your sex life. And if you use the promo code BELIEVE, you're going to get 15% off your purchase and free shipping. One more time, go to promescent.com, use the promo code BELIEVE for 15% off your purchase and free shipping. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let's start the show.
Fill her up.
Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the fuck up.
And new undisputed UFC middleweight champion of the world, Michael the Count Bisping.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back with another episode of the Believe You Me podcast with myself and my co-host for the day, none other than the regular, the old school, the one and only, the original, fuck you, Harrington type of guy, Mike Harrington. You're on the show. How are you, buddy? How are you feeling?
I'm doing great, Mike. It's an honor and privilege to be here as always, and I'm just glad that we're here after the text that we got yesterday around 4 p.m.
Ah, well, thank you very much. You are, of course, for those that don't, alluding to my neck. Yeah, I had neck surgery in January. You see the scar there. And they said a while ago I had to have two more plates put in. So I was kind of dreading that. But the last couple of weeks, maybe the last 3 weeks, the fucking neck pain I have is unbearable. So like, it starts off like right now I'm fine. But as the day progresses, when you're using the muscles in your neck, I would assume, or just using your neck, it gets worse and worse and worse. And come the evening, I'm sitting like that because it's so painful. And then, oh yeah, there you go. There you go. You can see the plate there and the screws holding it together. So what they're saying is that there's a potential they're going to do some MRIs, but they're saying they can see tons of arthritis in the neck. And they think maybe the screws and the plates are coming loose. They haven't fused properly. So that's a bit of an ish. But I was just going to say, sometimes when my neck's like, so I'm like this. I remember I was in a restaurant with Brantendo. Fuck knows where we were, and I've got my head down like that, and I'm rocking because it kind of helps it feel better. You know, I don't know how, right? And then I thought, oh my God, I legit look like a mentally handicapped person, and Brantendo is my carer.
Right. Yeah. Like they're like, sir, is your uncle having a seizure? What's going on here?
Yeah. They said, well, what is going on? And he's talking funny as well. He's got a weird accent. But still, listen, I'm going to be good. I'll be fine. They went in yesterday. They gave me an epidural with no anesthetic. They said, this is going to be fucking miserable. But, you know, generally we put you under a general anesthetic. You go unconscious and they do it. But I'd eaten. But I leave for England at the weekend. I said, please, you got to do something. I can't live my life like this. So they went, okay, we can do it, but it's going to suck. And it wasn't that bad, to be honest. You know, I was there, I let in the operating room. I put my face down on the thing. And the guy, the surgeon's trying to joke. He's very upbeat. Lovely guy, don't get me wrong. Lovely guy, but he's telling these jokes and he's very upbeat. And I'm like, but as he's joking, he's telling me, Mike, this is going to be miserable. This is going to be hard. So brace yourself. And I'm like, okay, well, stop fucking joking. Let me get in the zone. I'm trying to mentally prepare. So I'm just like closing my eyes and trying to like go into like a state of like relaxation and just let it fucking happen, you know, to zen out.
That's messed up, because, like, if he's joking like that, it should be a thing where it's, like, distracting you, right? So it's like, you're laughing, all of a sudden, boom, shot, you didn't even notice, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, well, it's a little more complex than that. They're taking pictures, they're doing lots of little pricks and this and that, and then eventually they put a big fuck-off needle in, I think. Then they did trigger point injections to try and release the neck, right? The neck muscles try and calm them down. They just inject it, I don't know what it is, fucking lidocaine, like a little, or some shit.
Yeah, like a little anyway, muscle relaxer. So they
did, yeah, something like that. Anyway. But then at the top of the neck is essentially the head, the skull. And he's sticking needles into my skull with no anesthetic. You know what I mean? That was hard, but still, we're good. I've got a few screws loose. Yeah, maybe I got a few screws loose. It's nothing new. I've heard that before. So I put it on Twitter yesterday and I said, oh, look at this. Got a few screws loose, apparently. And the jokes. Come on, Mike. We've known that for a while. But then somebody brought up a tweet of Sean Strickland. He said, no, this is the guy with real screws loose. And it was a picture of Sean Strickland. And yeah, I mean, come on. We love Sean. Thanks for coming on the show. Friend of the show. And I thought Sean was great. A little scary, a little terrifying, a little, you know, potential one to watch if you're a cop down the line. But I mean, he was in the words, some headlines recently, right?
He said the words, I would find joy in taking your life to me. So, yeah, he's a scary individual. But, you know, he had an interaction like that with somebody else, too, a bit of a road rage incident. You know, and he made sure that all of his bases were covered before he got out of the car. And I kind of respect that for Sean Strickland. Brian, if you want to play it.
Yeah, yeah, hold on, let me just preface it. Yeah, so he was wanting to put, apparently someone honked their horn, God forbid. It is annoying, though, when people honk the fucking horn. And you motherfuckers out here love to honk a horn. If you don't set off immediately at the red light when it turns green, you know what I mean? You guys fucking honk the horn. It's like, bro, it's been half a second. How about you use your fucking indicators? Anyway, so then apparently someone honked the horn and cut him off, and there was maybe an interaction. And then Sean Strickland's like, all right, pull over. Let's fight, but I'm just making sure. Are you armed? Do you have a gun or a knife on you? If the answer is no, then pull over and let's sort this out right now.
Oh, I'm going to bring something up that happened while we were in Texas. A road rage incident. Mike Harrington tried to get into a less than ideal Uber situation. The dude is being a huge dickhead. I'll give him that. However, Mike Harrington, like a crazy person with a championship belt around his fucking shoulder, tried to get into a fist fight with an Uber driver in Texas, and I swear to God, I thought I was going to watch him get shot in an intersection.
Yes. Well, number one, he deserves to be shot walking around with a skank face belt over his shoulder. Stop it, right? You're not a professional fighter. Get it. You're in it. You're training, whatever. You're buzzing off your belt, but still.
I still have my hand wraps on.
Still, oh God.
I had hand wraps on trying to get him to get out of the car to fight me. It was insane.
If you ever want to co-host this podcast again, stop.
I literally thought I was going to watch him die in an intersection from like 40 feet away. It was insane.
Oh my God. Barely the guy. In fact, I've got a similar story Saturday night, but let's take a look at Sean Strickland for a second. This guy's funny.
Roll down your window. Do you got a gun or a knife? No, I'm saying I'll pull over. No guns or knives. Shit, right now. No guns, no knives.
Yeah, and that's it. That's it. But hey, listen, fair play, because, you know, in this day and age, people do talk shit. I mean, fair enough. When you're in a car, if someone drives silly or whatever, you can give them a little beep, a little whatever, a little flip of the finger. You know, by my house, I don't know if we talked about it, a woman was driving her kid to school. And someone, there was an interaction, something like that. And the woman flipped off the driver and the fucking driver pulled a gun out, shot at the woman, but it missed the mother and hit the 6-year-old kid that she was taking to school in the stomach. The kid died. Dylan, there was a fucking big memorial by my house. Just one of the saddest stories you ever heard. Anyway, so yeah, Sean did the right thing there. Cause he's like, are you armed? Are you fucking, you got a knife or anything? Cause if not, let's go. But as a UFC fighter, Sean, a little bit of advice. Don't get into fights with member of the public. Members.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, this guy seemed to be honking his horn back. Sean Strickland said, put your window down. This guy was ready to put his window down. He said, I don't have a gun, but I got bullets, right? Like, this guy was talking shit back to Sean Strickland. And that's one of those things where it's like, I don't know. There is a part of me as a fan, right? That's like, it's very old school pro wrestling where it's like, if I am looking at you like a UFC fighter, I have to see, like, I have to picture you being a guy who's winning a fist fight with any other living mortal on the planet. So for Sean Strickland to be like, look, this guy is being as much of a dick as I am, he deserves this ass beating. You know, like, there is something that, like, as a fan, it, like, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah, I agree. But there's also something as an older man that's like, you know, it's not worth it. Do you know what I mean? Is it really worth it? Is this what, I mean, listen, by the way, you know, I'm preaching to the choir because I'm far from perfect. I have many flaws and I have many regrettable things that I do. In fact, I have one I can tell you about in a minute. And, you know, but still, from when you're outside of the situation looking in, it's easy to be calm, isn't it? It's easy to be judgmental and give better advice. But when you're the one in the moment and the adrenaline's flowing and the testosterone kicks in and you're like, fuck this guy. And then on top of that, your name is Sean Strickland. Then you do have a screw loose, not in the neck, but in the mind. Or metaphorically is the word I was looking for. We all wear masks metaphorically. What's the movie? We all wear masks metaphorically.
Analyze this.
It's in the title. Mask, Jim Carrey. Yeah. Look it up. You're fucking fired. Yeah, I'm sitting here, you know, giving, you know, holier than thou advice to Sean Strickland. At the weekend, we had Max Holloway taking on Yair Rodriguez. And what a sensational fight card that was, right? But these days, because it's at the Apex in Vegas, it's not far from my house, I was going to Phoenix, Arizona. The night after the fight. So I didn't drive. I said, fly me a one-way ticket. I was doing a thing for Hemp Fusion. I went to the Nitro Rallycross in Phoenix. Crazy event. Really, really, really fucking cool. Anyway, so I went down to John Wayne Airport and we're on Southwest Airlines. And for whatever reason, I'm boarding group fucking C. So I'm like the last to board. But the way they do it, I don't know if you've flown Southwest, they have these ABC, like these metal things that they spin round, right? And it was on C. When I walked up and like they were boarding for a while and I went for a pee and I came back and it said C. And I thought, oh shit, all right, here we go. So I wait in line, I go up, boop, scan my boarding pass. And the guy goes, sir, this is boarding group C. We are currently boarding group B. Okay, step aside. I'm like, all right, okay, whatever. Bit aggressive in my mind, I'm thinking, but all right, whatever. And there was a guy there, he was a UFC fan, he was cool. So we were chit-chatting, I'm standing there, I'm like, get a lot of that fucking hard on, Jesus Christ. But, you know, just whispering, keeping our voices down, you know what I mean? Anyway, the guy was like, you know, he was kind of dorky looking and it was like 9:30 at night. It's pitch black and he's got sunglasses balancing on the top of his forehead.
Can I take a guess? Oakley's?
Oakley's. I don't know if they were, but they looked like Oakley's. You're right. And anyway, I mean, fair play in his defense. It was bright earlier, but just take the shades off. But still, so me being I've been a little bit sarcastic and I just had to have the last fucking say because he was a rude asshole earlier. So then I woke up and I go, boom, with my boarding pass again. And I just said, literally, I swear to God, like this. I go, nice shades, by the way. I like the way they're on your head. Very cool. Very cool. And I went to walk off and he goes, step aside. I'm like, what? He's step aside right now. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, sir, you are not getting on that plane. I'm like, what? And I think he's overreacting. So I step aside. Then everyone else is trying to board, right? And there's all the other people behind me like, what are you doing? This guy didn't do anything. Spread love, one guy was saying. Come on, man. You ain't going to do this to this guy. He did nothing wrong. And he's like, sir, unless you want to get thrown off the plane, I advise you to stay out of it. And so at this point, I'm thinking, this motherfucker, he's not going to let me on the plane. So everyone's getting on. And there's two colleagues, and I'm trying to talk to them, two women. I'm trying to be nice, you know. I'm like, hey. And they wouldn't talk to me. They wouldn't look at me. They wouldn't give me the time of day. It's like I didn't fucking exist. And then at the end, I'm like, right, I'm going to pull my phone out. I'm going to start filming because I've done nothing wrong. On my children's life, I said, nice shade. Yeah. I like the way they're on your head. Sarcastic comment, yes. But still, he doesn't know it was sarcastic. Maybe they were cool fucking shades, you know. In a transcript read, in the court of law, it would hear me say, nice shades. I like the way they're on your head. You know what I mean? So
you can't gauge inflection over text.
Pardon me?
I said you can't gauge inflection over text. Yeah. I love that move, though, of trying to befriend his coworkers to make him look like the crazy one. That is so, there's nothing like that.
Yeah, but they ignored me majorly, which got me even madder because I'm like, you fucking saw this. You know he's being a prick. He's a Sean Strickland. So anyway, what happened? Also, I pull my camera out and I try and film it. And as soon as I do that, he says, no, you can't film it. I said, I think I can. And as soon as I did that, he walked down, like, you know, where you walk to board the plane from, like, the check-in desk, and he slams the door hard as fuck. So I turned around to his colleagues. I said, look at this. I said, he's clearly emotionally unstable. Why is he slamming doors? And anyway, then he comes back. He says, sir, if you don't put the camera down, I'm going to call the sheriffs. I said, oh, call the sheriffs, please, because what is going on right now is, I don't know what you would call it, but it's fucking bullshit. You know what I mean? I said, get the sheriffs. Please, by all accounts. So anyway, 4 or 5 sheriffs show up, all in the green fucking stuff with guns and whatnot. And they were UFC fans. It was fucking crazy. They walked over, hey, Mike, what's going on, buddy? I'm like, I'll tell you what's going on. This fucking asshole, they're like, don't swear. I said, don't fucking swear. He's thrown me off the plane for saying nice shades. Right? And the guy standing there, so I'm like, oh, and he wouldn't look at me. I'm like, look at me in the eye. And everyone's like, they're like, Mike, just let it go. I said, what do you mean, let it go? I said nice shades. He's not letting me on the plane. What do you want me to do? Be a little victim and go, oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm not getting on the plane because he says so. All right. There we go. No, fuck that. If you do that, I am going to cause as much of a scene as possible without going to prison. You know what I mean? I'm going to fucking let them know that this kind of behavior cannot be tolerated, you know? And then the guy's like, come on. And they were cool as fuck. They went, right, Mike. I said, I'm trying to get to work. I'm trying to commentate the fights. I've got to get there tonight. So then they're like, right, okay. They're looking at the other flights for me. They said, do you want to fly Frontier? I said, I'll fly anything. I just got to get to Vegas. They went, nah, it's boarded already. He said, it'll be taking off in a minute. I said, you know what? Fuck it. My wife will pick me up. I'll drive into Vegas. Oh, good. Don't worry about it. And then they were so nice. And I said, thank you for your service, fellas. But that fucking guy. And then I was on the phone for an hour and 45 minutes to Southwest Airlines. Oh, fuck you, Southwest.
So you genuinely did not get on. I thought for sure this story was going to end with this guy being like, I respect the police officers and what the police officers say, I say is okay. And they just let you on the plane.
Y'all respect the police officers and what y'all say is okay?
Right, like just a real Richard Jewell situation, you know? Like the guy's got his glasses on his head. He's looking at the floor because he sees the sheriffs agree with you and he realizes he's been an idiot and then like just let you on the plane. But no, that's wild.
Yeah, didn't let me on the plane. Dude, let me on the plane. I was so fucking pissed.
Southwest Airlines is Greyhound in the air. You know what I mean? Like, who is that fucking serious about letting someone on, like, Group B, groups? Who cares? It's literally,
or saying nice shades. I honestly, I cannot reiterate because I know I have a reputation, right? I know that people may think, oh, come on, tell the truth, Bisping. On my life, I'm long enough in the tooth now to know that in those kind of settings, you can't use any kind of profanity or bad language because they're fucking sensitive assholes looking to be offended and they'll use it against you, right? You can't show any kind of aggression because, again, they'll use that against you. You certainly can't turn up drunk or nothing. I know the rules because I've broken those rules and paid the price many times. I'm not going to play that game. I just said, oh, nice shades, mate. I like the way you're on your head. Cool. You know, but sarcastic tone, whatever. But anyway, so that was that. So then I jump in the car, I drive to Las Vegas. I get there at like 4 in the fucking morning now. I was very tired, driving through the desert by myself, slapping myself in the face, trying to wake up because I thought I need to pull over and have a rest. But if I do that, I'm going to pass out properly and then wake up at 7. And the call time for the fight was 9 a.m. So I was very tired, but whatever. Fortunately, the fights were fucking amazing.
Yeah, I mean, if you had any trouble waking up, I mean, starting off the card with a very early, like, you know, that's the perfect way to, like, all right, I'm in it. We're 100% awake and ready to go with fights for this weekend.
No. It really was, you know. So I got a few hours. We went there. The first fight of the night was Kennedy Zichukwu. It's a hard one to say. Kennedy and Zichukwu versus, who did he fight? Good fighter.
Daeon Jung.
Oh, Daeon Jung, yeah, from South Korea. Pardon me. I don't know. I forgot that name. It just rolls off the tongue. Right. But that was the first fight of the night. Two really good contenders, I think, in the light heavyweight division on win streaks. 10 o'clock in the morning. That was the first fight. It was unbelievable. Anyways, the fight's progressed. Let me just bring up the fight card real quick so I know what I'm talking about. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, hold on. Hola. We are doing two shows a week again.
Oh, yeah.
Rodriguez. We gave it a try, the longer shows, but I feel like 2 hours sometimes is a long time. So we're going to go 2 1-hour, 1-hour, 20-minute shows a week. So there you go. Stay tuned for those ones, boys. Back to the old school.
A little more variety, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, exactly. Things happen throughout the week that we miss. Like, we're going to talk about Leon Edwards falling off the card next month. We never got to talk about that. That's kind of old news now. You know what I mean? So we want to stay current. Here's the thing. That fight card at the weekend tied the record for the most finishes on any UFC event in history, which is crazy because there was only 11 fights on. Sometimes there could be 15, 16 fights. There was only 11 fights. 9 of them were finishes. Had there been a finish in the main event, which quite frankly, I don't know how the fuck there wasn't, they would have broken the record, but still tying it's pretty good. So you had Daun Jung, he beat Kennedy and Zijiku Wu. Marja Casey sadly got caught in a guillotine by Rafael Alves. Courtney Casey was a decision. Sean Woodson, you see that one?
Oh, yeah.
Fucking Sean Woodson, man. He's really good. He beat Colin Anglin, body punches. Andrea Lee retired Cynthia Calvillo. I felt kind of sorry for Cynthia Calvillo. You know, she was very upset. She was very emotional. She just moved to Las Vegas. I know you love the female fighters, Harrington.
I do. My question for you is, you know, this is now her, third or fourth fight at flyweight. You know, she had the early success getting the I think it was a main event fight in her first fight at flyweight, or a fight very high up on the card. It shot her really high up in the rankings. Now she's in this weird place where she has to fight the highest ranked people at flyweight. And I'm not sure if she shouldn't be back at strawweight.
Well, I mean, the results, the proof is in the pudding. But she talked about trying to make 115 was just fucking incredible for her. Insane, very, very difficult. But still, she retired on the stool after round two. And I said on my YouTube channel, I said, Brant Sandel did an amazing video, so go check that out, please, on my YouTube page. But I kind of respect it. And I know a lot of people say, because I said this when Nick Diaz retired. Was it in the third round or the second round? In the third round, I think. Whatever it was, when he retired in that fight against Robbie Lawler, when he basically stayed on the ground and said, I'm done.
Right.
And I respected Nick Diaz then, and I kind of respect Cynthia Calvillo, because a lot of people think that's quitting. And why do you respect quitting? Because quitters never win and all that stuff. And it's true. That's right. You do want to see that warrior mentality, a guy that's going to push themselves, or a girl that's going to push themselves to the limit, to do whatever they can to win. But there's also a time when you got to have a bit of self-realization and be like, I ain't winning this fight. I'm getting my ass kicked. My nose is broken. Both eyes are black. My lips smashed to pieces. My calves are compromised because they've been kicked to fuck. I am not winning this fight. I'm not having a good time. I'm getting beaten to fuck. Physically, a lot of damage. Psychologically, even more damage. You know, this third round, even if I win it, I've still lost on the scorecards. Let's save myself from that 5-minute damage. Say, you know what? Well done. I'm going to fucking hate myself for it later. But there's a bit of honesty there and reality that I respect.
Well, I look at a situation like Raquel Pennington, right? She was fighting Amanda Nunes for the title. She had gotten beat for, she'd gotten beaten all four rounds, right? It was down 4-0 on the scorecards. Her corner was questioning whether or not they should be throwing in the towel. And it's like, I didn't need to see her go out there and get TKO'd by Amanda Nunes. That fight was already over well before she got off the seat in the fifth round. Then she came back and lost her next fight to Jermaine Durandamay. And it's like, I don't know, maybe that concept of realize when you've been beat, throw in the towel, fight another day. You only have, I genuinely do believe this, and Mike, you have a much better barometer of this than anybody, but I feel like fighters only have a certain number of times where your lights can go out and you're still going to remain an effective fighter with an effective chin.
No. So it's 100%. Once you start, look at Chuck Liddell, prime example, right? That Chuck Liddell, you could hit him with a fucking baseball bat early in his career and he wouldn't flinch. Rashad Evans knocked him out, and then that just became a succession. Knockout after knockout. I forget who they all were. I know Rich Franklin was one of them. Who else was some of the people that knocked him out? But yeah, Chuck got knocked out a few times. And it was sad to see, because he's one of the guys that built this sport and put the sport on the map. He was one of the early superstars and everyone loved him. And he was really fucking good. Rampage knocked him out. But that was a little bit earlier, before the big skid, I think. No, Rampage, Rashad, Rich Franklin,
Shogun,
Machida, Shogun.
Rich Flying, Tito in his last fight, but we don't count that.
Tito Ortiz. That one was a bit sad. Anyway, moving on, because we want to get to the good stuff. Song Yadong, Julio Arce, beating with a head kick. Well done, Song Yadong. Chaos Williams versus Miguel Baeza. Really, really good fight. Caramel Thunder, Miguel is great. Chaos Williams, real name, by the way, legally changed his name to Chaos. Gangster move. I like that. I respect that. Maybe not good when you're going in for job interviews. What's your name? Chaos. Is that your real name, sir? Yeah. I changed it legally. They're like, right, okay. So you're going to be working with children? Yeah. Right, bitch. Whatever, man. Yeah, you know what I mean? I'm not sure Chaos going into a job interview, but he's good. He's knocking people out. I don't think he's applying for any jobs anytime soon. He got the job done in round three. From Miguel Baeza, he was going to the calf kicks far too much, and he got just a little predictable. He was chopping the leg up. Don't get me wrong. He was hurting Chaos, but when you do it that much, you know, an old coach of mine used to always say, never do the same technique more than twice. Because if you do it once, you'll catch him. Second time, still an element of surprise. When you go to the third time, they're fucking expecting it. They're waiting for it. And he clipped him, put him down. So that was a shame. Felicia Spencer dominated Leah Letton. Marcos Rogério de Lima put a quick beat down on friend of the show, Ben Rothwell.
Man, I thought that was tough to watch. I miss
it
Ben.
Was. Who doesn't like Ben? You know? Mm-hmm. Ben Rothwell's fucking awesome. I like that guy a lot.
I'm just blown away. Sorry, I just wanted to go back to the Chaos Williams things for one more second. I mean,
yeah,
he's now 4-1 in the UFC, 3 KO/TKO. And I mean, his wins are Alex Moreno, Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, and then, just Miguel Baez right there. His one loss to Michelle Paella, I don't know, these guys, he's the Contender Series guy, Chaos Williams, correct, right?
Correct, I believe so, yeah.
Okay, so it's it feels like these guys, the Sugar Sean O'Malley has been there for a little bit, but is somebody like Chaos Williams a real threat to be the first Contender Series guy to make a run in the rankings?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, Sugar Sean O'Malley certainly is a name that springs to mind. There's a few other guys as well. I forget them all now. There's a lot of fucking good talent coming out of the Contender, I tell you. Jailton Almeida, he's fighting soon. I commentated his fight on the Contender recently. Keep an eye out for that guy. I'm telling you, he's fucking unreal. Anyway, let's get into the main event. Max Holloway, Yair Rodriguez. Holy fucking shit. And we got some non-MMA stuff. We got some fun stories. We got some fun topics. We're going to get into it. We're going to have a fucking laugh. We're going to make fun of Harrington. Maybe a bit of Brian. The guys are going to make fun of me, you know? But we are going to talk that fucking main event. Because that...
I would never make fun of you.
Not to my face. I'm sure it happens a lot when I'm not around.
Hey, Mike, let me just jump in here for a sec. I got to let people know support for the Believe in Me podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. They're the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you with the best tools for your grooming experience. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. So join the movement for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. I mean, who hasn't been there before? You're in the shower, you're shaving your balls. All of a sudden, the water turns red, and you realize your balls are about to hurt for the next, week and a half, because those little cuts, they never heal just right. Well, Manscaped figured that out.
Well, I don't need to see the blood to know that I've cut myself, because normally when I nick myself, especially with a fucking electric razor, the pain, because it's not like a little paper cut. It's like when those things get in there, when they get the scrotum, when they rip your ball sack apart and you start to bleed, I don't need to see the blood. There is a loud scream immediately. Fortunately, that is a thing of the past with the Manscaped. The third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to the advanced skin safe technology pioneered by Manscaped. Also, 90-minute battery, so you don't have to be shaving it all the time. It is waterproof, allowing you to groom in the shower. Has an LED light if for some reason you're showering in the pitch black. It's also got a 7,000 RPM quiet stroke motor technology. So when you're doing it, no one needs to know. Doesn't sound like there's a chainsaw going off, but I tell you what, I got a bit of hippie dick going on. When it's going through my fucking pubes later today, it's going to sound like a fucking chainsaw. That's for sure. So listen, if you want to trim your balls, which you should be doing, a bit of self-grooming is necessary in this day and age, and you don't want to hurt yourself, and you want the best products on the market, and you want it at a great price, and you want it in a nice little cooling stand, so it can, charging stand, pardon me, just stands there and just charges, cool as fuck, pick it up whenever you need it, there you go, off you pop, clean as a whistle, smooth as a baby's bum, no accidents. And we're going to save you 20% because all you got to do is go to manscaped.com. Use the code BISPING20. That's going to get you 20% off. Manscaped.com. Your balls are going to thank you. You will thank you. Your significant other will be like, wow, you are smooth in more ways than one. Manscaped.com. BISPING20 is the code. 20% off with free shipping. Where were we? Hold on. There were some stats that the UFC send us after every event. I'm going to read some of these out of here. Max Holloway is now the first and only fighter in UFC history to land 3,000 total strikes. At fight's end, Holloway has connected with 3,056 now. So number one's Max Holloway, 3,056. Number two, George St. Pierre, 2,591. Frankie Edgar at three, 2,479. Nate Diaz, John Fitch. I would have been in there somewhere because I used to hold the fucking record. Don't know what happened to that. Max Holloway has now earned his 18th win at 145 pounds, tying Jose Aldo for the most wins in UFC/WEC. Don't like the way they count the WEC. It's not the UFC. Whatever. Holloway landed 230 strikes. Rodriguez landed 159. And that combines for 389 significant strikes, landed the third largest tally in any single UFC fight. So anyway, those stats alone paint the picture of how action-packed that was.
Well, sorry, just the WEC thing kind of got to me because those divisions didn't exist in the UFC before WEC.
So what?
Right?
They existed in tons of fucking promotions. Are we going to fucking include them? Oh, Cage Warriors, boom. Pride, get it in. Shockwave, yeah, baby, get those fucking ones in. Let's go. Just because they bought it, get fucked. And they do the same with Strikeforce. I was in the UFC only. Those motherfuckers are affecting my records, okay? That's the only reason. Ego, ego. That's my only reason that. I would be ahead on the scorecards or the record books on a lot of these fucking things, but they're fucking bringing in Tom, Dick, and Harry promotions. I don't like it, Harrington. I do not like it.
I stand corrected as usual, Mr. Bisping. You're correct. I mean, I think everybody walked away from that weekend. Max Holloway went in as, I think, a minus 600 favorite against Yair Rodriguez, which is insane, by the way. No one should be that big of a favorite against Yair Rodriguez. And Yair Rodriguez, to his credit, he kept that fight close.
It was crazy. I'll be honest, first two rounds, I was starting to get... Because listen, you know, may the best man win. I have a relationship with Max, a little bit of a one, you know, less of a relationship with Yair. As a commentator, you've always got to stay impartial, you know, but then like, you obviously care for some guys, you know what I mean? You don't bring that out in the broadcast, but still. And I was a little concerned for Max, you know, because some of the shots that Yair was landing early... Fuck me, man. The power on them things. I was like, how is he still standing? Max Holloway has got a fucking chin. It's crazy. But he showed why he's one of the most dominant fighters we've got in the UFC. Because round one, could have made an argument for Yair, I think. Two was close. Max landed more. Yair had the harder blows. How do you weigh that up? Three, four, Max made some beautiful adjustments, right? Got the takedowns, worked in the clinch, worked the body, great knees on the ground, just fucking put Yair in a world of fucking pain. And God bless Yair. He never stopped fighting. He never stopped moving. He never stopped trying to just get out of the position. You know, he did what he could. And round five, he turned on the pressure again. He had a good round five. So it was a really close fight. I think everyone knew Max had won that fight. And even still, because I got told him, yeah, we're going to interview Yair as well, interview the loser. So I went up to his team and said, hey, listen, tell Yair to stick around because we're going to speak to him as well, which is kind of alluding already before the scorecards read out that he's lost. You know what I mean? But I know because they tell you in my ear, okay, it's 30-27 or whatever it is to this guy.
Do they really?
We know. I know already.
Oh, what?
As soon as that fucking gets tallied, they tell the truck and the truck tells me or whoever's
I thought Bruce Buffer was the only man in the building who knew until that moment. I'm
Bruce
dumb.
And me, baby. Bruce and me. But sometimes no. Sometimes it's like, you know, it's too, you know, sometimes it's taking a while and it's live TV. You know what I mean? So, but most of the time, just to make it smooth, so I know where I'm going and maybe I can have a quick think about what I'm gonna ask. You know what I'm saying?
I'm gonna get the close fight. I'm gonna keep my eyes on you next time it goes while he's reading that decision. See who you're looking at.
Who is he looking at? What was I gonna say? So yeah, listen, no, Yair's team had no issue with it. I think they accepted. But Yair and Max, the fucking respect that they showed afterwards in that post-fight speech, It was unbelievable. You know, he was shouting out Mexico. He was showing love to Hawaiians. You know, they went in there. They beat the shit out of each other because Max was fucked up as well. Max and Yair were both a mess. It's crazy. Again, I'm not kissing the UFC ass. It's just true. The week before, we had Madison Square Garden. We had fucking Chandler and Gaethje potentially putting on the fight of the year. The week before that, we had Fight Island with an insane fight card there. And now we've got Yair and fucking Holloway. Do you know what I mean? Putting on a fight like that. That might have been better than Chandler versus Gaethje.
I mean, just because
it might have been better than Chandler versus Gaethje. You don't have that's not a statement.
That's true. That's true.
I'm just throwing it out there. That's how good it was.
I think you make a very compelling argument simply because it was a 5-round fight, right? So those guys had to come out for an extra 2 rounds. So I'm always going to weigh that over a 3-round fight. But I mean, especially, dude, Max landing that blast double. How crazy was that? Max Holloway doing like a Goldberg spear out of nowhere and just planting Yair Rodriguez. This is like stuff I never thought I would see. His game continues to evolve. And it's like, I don't know, if I'm not mistaken, Max is one of those guys who just stopped sparring a while ago, right?
Yeah, doesn't spar. I mean, God bless him. I still think a little bit of sparring here and there would help, but I spar too much and I paid the price throughout my career. So he's absolutely right. When we did the fighter meeting with him, he said, I don't need to spar. I don't need to prove I can take a punch. I know I'm tough, bro. I don't need to spar. I can't really do a Hawaiian accent. I'm an island boy, right? But easy. I don't need to spar, man. No, I can't do it. I can't fucking do a Hawaiian. I probably could if I got to Hawaii and hang out with some Kendall girl for a bit.
So did you find, like, I just want to process this. So did you find it easier to learn these new things? Because like I said, like, this is 3 takedowns for Max Holloway. Never gotten that in a fight before. He clearly, it seemed like his wrestling is something he's working on. Because Yair did come in with pretty good takedown defense. Did you find it was easier to, like, learn these things and learn these, like, moves and techniques by drilling them over and over again with high-level instructors or by learning them and then putting them into play and sparring? Like, which one do you...
Drilling, you have to drill. You have to drill, because when you learn it one time, two times, five times, 10 times, that's all well and good. You can't then go and do that for real in the octagon against somebody that's resisting. You might do it on the mat where they just fall. Say you're doing a double leg, most people, and they fall over. I'm like, can you give me a little bit of resistance? Can you actually, like, let me try and take you down as opposed to me making contact and you falling down? No one's learning anything there. Stop being a fucking wet, dead fish, you know? But you got to drill. Drillers are killers is what they say. You got to drill. And it's hard. It's hard work just drilling over again. You got two guys, chum, you work as three, they take you down. And just over and over and over again because you're building up that neural pathway in the brain and it becomes second nature. And then, of course, you got to do it for real in the octagon. You got to do that in training and stuff. But amazing fight. Don't want to spend too much long on it. One guy was fired up for the fight. Who am I talking about?
I mean, the guy who I think it makes most sense for Max Holloway to fight next, Conor McGregor.
I don't know if that makes the most sense to fight him next, although Conor seems to be parlaying or playing or just fucking, I don't know what he's doing with his fucking shirt off, walking up and down, flexing at Max Holloway through a TV. It was not a FaceTime. It was not a giant iPad and they were FaceTiming one another live from the Apex. No, he's fucking... He's got the shirt off. He said, babe, just film this a minute. I'm just going to walk back and forth, look intimidating. Yeah. I mean, what do you say to that, Harrington? Is that how you watch the fights?
I mean, first things first, you're Conor McGregor. You're basically a billionaire. What's with the 32-inch Vizio, doggy?
Was it a Vizio?
I mean, I don't know, but that was not the kind of TV I expected in any room of a McGregor household.
Yeah. Just bring it back up. Yeah, you're right. He is a fucking... The guy's insanely wealthy. Let's see it again, Brian.
Why you got Costco TVs, dude?
I want to break down the fucking room. Yeah, you know what I mean? No. But Brian, Harrington, what you're forgetting is see to the right of the TV. Mm-hmm. See that black thing?
Yeah.
That's one of those stands that pops out and you put your suitcase on it.
Oh, so he's at a hotel. Okay, that's fair.
I think he's at a hotel.
Well, in that case, stay in a nicer hotel, Conor McGregor. That place looks shabby.
Yeah, what the fuck gives me shit for flying commercial? You know what I mean?
Dude, what is it? You're at a bed and breakfast in Brussels? What the hell are you doing?
Hey, bro, I can't say shit. I stay at the Holiday Inn every week with the UFC, so don't tell anyone. But it's free. Let me see. So, yeah, listen. Max said, Max said, I'm on the shortlist to fight Conor McGregor. And I thought there, I thought, oh, are they going to do a boxing match with Conor and Max? Because think about it. Conor is the biggest earner in the UFC by far. His numbers, you know, love him or hate him, he brings in the fucking numbers. You cannot deny that. So they'd like to get him back sooner rather than later. An MMA fight is a tremendous amount of stress on the joints, i.e. the legs, right? Kicking is also a big no right now for him. But you can get to a point where you can box a little bit. And of course, moving around on the feet, there's still a lot of stress on the legs. But still, it's easier than an MMA fight. But Dana White shot that down straight away at the post-fight press conference. He said, no, stop calling out Conor. Stop talking about Conor. Conor is hurt. He's going to be out for a while. We are not thinking about Conor at all. So there you go. There's that.
That's fair. And he did say, you know, to Dana White's credit, he did say that he thinks the Volkanovski trilogy makes sense. Something that, you know, a lot of people were questioning, you know, whether or not that really made the most sense in the world. But there truly isn't anyone else at 145 right now that Volkanovski could fight that's a credible challenger. You know, I mean, I feel like the two of them combined have essentially cleared out the top of that division. And it's like a situation like where Demetrius Johnson had to fight Joseph Benavidez once every 3 years because they were clearly the two best in the world at 125.
You see, Arrington, look at you with the MMA knowledge. You're absolutely right. I'm serious, though. Really, really good point, because that's what it is. Unfortunately, you're right. Unfortunately, you're right. And I say unfortunate. That's not the right word. But for Volkanovski and Max Holloway, you don't want to keep going through the same shit. You know what I mean? Of course, Volkanovski's beaten him twice. He would have the right to say, I don't want to fight him. But when Max Holloway is then beating everybody the way he did, beating Kelvin Kattar the way he did, and he's beaten lots of others. I mean, there really isn't anyone else, as you say. And I'd fucking watch it. I'd watch it. I just don't know if the fight would be any different. The first fight and the second fight were really similar the way they played out, and they were very, very close. Second fight, same way. I think the third fight would be something similar. You know, both guys are fucking great. Both guys are exceptionally talented. And both guys, they're very equal. Let's be honest. The fights could have gone the other way. Volkanovski got the answer at the decision. So maybe on the next one, it goes a little differently, but then they just do another fight. You know what I'm saying? It's like, well, we're just going to keep having them two all the time.
Well, I mean, you know, we were talking about, you know, Colby Covington, right, ahead of the Kamaru Usman rematch. And everybody's saying, I don't think I've seen enough new stuff out of Colby for me to think that he would win a rematch with Kamaru Usman. Max Holloway, right, the best performance we've ever seen him have against Calvin Kattar, literally talking to the broadcast booth while putting a beating on the man, and then to go out there against Yair Rodriguez, take those big shots early, adapt his game plan, change it, you know, to pull off the most takedowns he's ever had. This is clearly somebody who's constantly adding to his game, constantly evolving as a mixed martial artist, whereas, I don't know, that Alexander Volkanovski that just beat Brian Ortega feels like the same guy that, you know, won a close split decision against Max Holloway. You know, like, I don't see that next level.
No, you're absolutely right. Nice t-shirt, by the way. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to buy a t-shirt, go to bympod@gmail.com, not bymmerch@gmail.com. And if you use the promo code BYM50, you're going to get 50% off. There's hoodies, there's t-shirts, there's Devil's Avocado, there's all kinds of stuff. BYM50 gets you 50% off. Then we're going to come out with some new designs. Anyway, one thing that Max did mention, and this is a fucking great segue for me. That's why I've got the trophy. He said, I've also got a win over the 155-pound champ, Charles Oliveira, which he does at 145. So that could be an interesting wrinkle, an extra little thing for Max. And I would assume that Max is secretly hoping that Oliveira beats Dustin Poirier. Because he could make an argument to go up there and fight him. You know, I'm sure they want to do Justin Gaethje. Or maybe not. If you ask Khabib Nurmagomedov, they've been talking a bit of shit back and forth.
Yeah, to anybody who will listen, apparently, Khabib, you know, not known as really much of a talker during his fighting career, but now that he's, you know, relaxing and being a soccer star in Dagestan, he has no problem calling out everybody on the roster.
Yes, brother. He said, Justin, what are you talking about? In the last 8 fights, you got finished 3 times, Justin. You had opportunity to become champion, but you fell asleep, didn't you? Islam is on 9 fight win streak, 3 fights in 2021, and all finishes. Just shut up and admit that Islam deserves this title shot. And not you. And of course, Justin came back. He talked shit. Khabib went back and talked shit. Khabib's been, what's he doing? Khabib's been talking a little bit of shit to a few people, weren't he, recently? I think Jose Aldo got a little taste of got a little verbal slap down from Khabib as well.
Well, yeah, he said that, you know, a man can't have two primes, essentially, right? Like, Jose Aldo has become a champion. He did that. He's past that stage of his career. And it's, you know, he really shouldn't be hanging on to, you know, the ghost of his MMA career anymore, right? His best days are behind him, and he shouldn't be, you know, calling out the, you know, his other brethren, you know, in the, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I get it. Look, listen, Justin, I think Dana even said at the UFC 268 press conference, Justin is ranked number two. If he wins this fight, he fights next. And you can't deny that logic, you know. And Justin came back and he said, listen, Islam, he's beaten, you know, his guys aren't ranked and all the rest of it. You know, he has a point. They both have points. At the end of the day, Justin goes next, right? Islam is going to get a shot eventually. Let's be honest. You know what I mean? Islam's going to get a shot, and whoever's fucking doing it better be ready with the takedown defense, because that motherfucker's coming. Yes, brother, I am coming to smash. What else should we get?
This does feel like one of those situations, in my mind at least, where the natural booking would be Justin Gaethje versus the winner of Oliveira versus Poirier, with Islam Makhachev as like the assigned fill-in fighter, right? Because especially in these times of COVID, who knows what's going to happen? You know, they've seem to make like the number one contender is the designated fill-in, and they've stuck to that, you know, booking policy, which I like.
No. Listen, either way, I can't wait for Poirier versus Oliveira. That fight card's fucking ridiculous. There's one here that I want to get into, not MMA. Former NBA All-Star Deron Williams will be boxing future Hall of Famer running back Frank Gore on the undercard of Tommy Fury versus Jake Paul. Not that bothered about that. Don't know who Deron Williams is. Don't know who former running back Frank Gore is. Quite frankly, couldn't give a shit. I'm sure they're lovely guys. I'm sure they had great careers. NBA star. Fucking running back for an NFL team.
NBA All-Star, and then I think the number third or fourth all-time NFL rushing leader. These guys are both very, very highly respected in their individual sports. I guess.
Yes. But they could come up and spit in my face, and I would literally have no idea who it was. Maybe the baseball player. Maybe I'd pull that one out. He's probably 7 foot tall. I'm like, ugh. Anyway, but he says, in another freak show fight, Jake Paul's girlfriend has offered to mud wrestle Tommy Fury's girlfriend on the undercard. Now, before we take a look at these, because I hope to Christ they are attractive, because nobody wants to see two fat mingers. No offense to fat mingers out there. Just is what it is. If this was still on Triller, we might get this. But this ain't going to happen on Showtime. They're trying to make this legitimate. You know what I'm saying? The Showtime, they're trying to bring in some extra buzz. You can't have two girls. And I hate to be a buzzkill, because I know you want it 100%. I know Brian wants it. And I know maybe wants to see the pictures. I might want it. But I just don't think that if you're trying to make this a legitimate event, you have your birds rolling around in mud in the ring earlier on the night.
Okay. Well, I mean, to be fair, you know, Mrs. Fury or whatever her name is, Tommy's girlfriend has not agreed to this. And this was something that Jake's girlfriend said for TMZ. So, yeah, you're right. Showtime probably wouldn't allow this. But what a down-ass chick Jake Paul's girlfriend is to be like, yeah, whatever. I'll get half naked and try
Listen,
to go
no,
rep for
I,
my
I,
man.
I'm against it. This is dampening the spirit of the beautiful science of the what is it? It's the beautiful
the
science.
Sweet science.
The sweet science. Yeah, let's take a look at these people though. And I'm not for it. Oh, listen, edit that bit out. I'm fucking 100% down for this. Okay, and listen, you might say this is cheapening the sport. It's giving the people what they want, Brian.
They seem like some very competitive ladies, and I would love to see them scrap.
Hold on. So who's with who? I remember seeing Jake Paul's girlfriend at the fight. I think that's the one on the left.
The one in so. in the less top is going to yes. be Jake Paul's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And the one on the right is Tommy Fury.
Well, hey, listen, let's be honest. The one with Jake Paul's girlfriend there. I don't want to say it. Everybody Ooh. Wants a little bit of fame, don't they? You know what I'm saying? Oh, throw me on the undercard as well. You know what I'm saying? Well, you know, I'll wrestle Tommy's fucking girlfriend. You know, all of a sudden she's a fucking famous fucking fighter now. Do you know what I mean? It seems to be that easy.
Well, I'm pretty sure she actually became famous in her own right well before dating Jake Paul, simply because she sat behind home plate at the World Series and flashed the camera.
Did she really?
I really do think that is her claim to fame.
Oh, I love this girl. Brian, bring up her Instagram. Let's take a look. Do you know what I mean? Because a girl like that, she deserves to have her Instagram page looked at. That's all I'm saying. She's going out there. She's doing a lot of work. She's doing this a lot. She's sticking her ass out. She's wearing next to fucking nothing. And she ain't doing it.
Oh, man. Sorry, guys, but Julia Rose Paul is private.
What?
I will work on that. And if I get it up before the end of the episode.
Oh, yeah. So you're going to send the request. Why would a woman like that be private? That's bizarre.
Well, simply because if you want to look at her photos, you have to follow her and it gets her follower count up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like a lot of the big meme accounts will do that because if you go to send them to your friend then needs to subscribe to the page to see.
Oh, them. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm always getting sent memes and I don't follow them and this and that. And I'm like, it's private, dickhead. Also, anyone that fucking talks shit on Instagram, always private, 100% each and every single time. So who's Jake Paul? Jake Paul, Tommy Fury. I'm telling you right now. Did you see? And we're going to move on from these assholes in a minute. Tommy Fury obviously comes from the lineage of the great Fury boxing family, Tyson Fury, John Fury, his dad, and all the rest of it. Billy Joe Saunders is attached. You know, there's a big crew of them.
Is he really in that? I didn't know that.
He's not part of the family, but they're very, very close. You know what I mean? Okay. They're all part of the same crew, if you will. You know what I mean? So he said, if you lose this fight, you got to change your name to Tommy Fumbles. Legal name change. Have we spoke about this on here?
No, it was in the notes. We never got to it.
Yeah. He has to change his name to Tommy Fumbles if he loses. But he gave him the choice. He said, you can either donate $500,000 or change your name to Tommy Fumbles. And he took that, I'll change my name to Tommy Fumbles. And Jake Paul came up with the best line ever. He said, oh, look at this. Look at this. This guy values money over the dignity of his boxing family's last name. And I thought, what a great line.
Devil's avocado?
Devil's avocado all day.
If a Fury, right, anybody in the Fury family goes out and loses a boxing match to anybody in the Paul family, Tyson better be the one driving them to the office to get their name changed, period. He knows he's got to change his name anyway, so why give up the cash? You can't walk around with the Fury legacy losing to a Paul brother, period.
Well, his dad said, if you lose to Jake Paul, you're out of the family. He said, that's it. I will disown you. You are fucking done. And I'm sure he won't do that, but that is what he said. And I'll be honest, I think Jake Paul beats him. Based upon Tommy Fury's last fight against that guy from Bellator, mm-hmm. the little wrestler that hasn't had one boxing fight, and Tommy won, but it was kind of close. I think Jake Paul beats him. I think he's getting his name changed to Tommy Fumbles, and I think he's kicked out of the family. I think he's going to develop a very, very strong drinking and drugs problem. We're going to see him in nightclubs. Gurning his fucking head up again like we saw recently. Anyway.
Or is this the true Rocky story? Remember, Tyson won the belt. He got a little bit fat. He got into the drink a little bit. 400-pound man. Had to work his way back into championship shape and then became, you know, the pound-for-pound number one on the planet. Could that be Tommy's path, right? Lose to Jake Paul. Lose the family name. Get
No. Oh, yeah. He's going to lose to Jake Paul. And disappear. He's going to lose the Jake Paul, put loads of weight on, become a drug addict, come back, lose all the weight, fucking become champion of the world and giving millions to charities and homeless people. I don't foresee that on the weather forecast for Tommy Fury. But I hope so. I hope that it's quite the fucking story. And you never know. You never know. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows who fucking wins? Who fucking cares? Hopefully I'll be there covering it for BT Sport. So I care. Love it. Love a bit of Paul. All right. Got to talk about this. Brother, listen, I take people up in the sky, I put them down, I talk to Dana White. Who am I talking about? I am number one gangster. Who is this?
Hamza?
Yes, it's not Khabib, but they're all the fucking
brother.
Same. Brother, listen. Yeah, he's fighting Gilbert Burns. Probably, maybe. they're talking about it. I heard Hamza Chimaev said to the UFC, I want to fight in front of a crowd. I'm the Apex and Fight Island are awesome, but I want these big 20,000 seater crowds. And they said, all right, well, we've got pay-per-view in December. We've got one in January. We'll stick you on one of them. He said, no, I want to be on both of them. And they're like, you can't do that. That's just not how it works. But it just, Ham's like, you have to fucking admire the guy. Do you know what I mean? He's like, no, brother, I've had both. I smashed these guys. No problem. Then put me on next card.
Well, to be fair, you win the first one. You're probably going to get on the second one.
Possibly. Possibly.
If you still want and don't have a medical suspension, I mean, we've seen precedent for this. I feel like you can't book someone on two pay-per-views in a row because that actually means something for that booking, right? You're trying to sell tickets, you're trying to sell pay-per-views, whatever. But it's like, if that guy's available and he only, like, he's eaten one significant strike so far, if he goes in at 269 unscathed, you really think Dana White's going to be like, nah, stay home for 270?
I did UFC 78, I believe, in Montreal. And then as I fought Jason Day or some fucker, I don't know. No, I didn't fight Jason Day. I fought Chainsaw Charles McCarthy in my middleweight debut. And as I was weighing in, Marshall Zalesnik came up and said, we had Chuck Liddell drop out of the card in London. Can you fight on the next pay-per-view? I went, yeah, of course I can. As long as I get out of this one unscathed, I'll be there. Won them both first round, so that was nice. But Hamzat, gotta fucking love this guy. Now, obviously, Leon Edwards, unfortunately, was fighting. Was he fighting? Help me out.
Jorge Masvidal.
Masvidal. How did I forget that? Fuck, what a fight. I'm devastated for that. That was a great fight. Stylistically, Masvidal, he's awesome to watch. He is, and I love his character. Leon Edwards, had he beaten Masvidal, come on. It would have been a title fight next. Masvidal gets injured, apparently an undisclosed injury. So he's out the equation. They wanted him, Leon, to fight Hamza. And I think, you know, his management were like, no, we're not doing that. And I understand that. It's like, why? It's risk versus reward. Fucking Leon's on a 10-fight win streak. We've got this hot contender coming in now that hardly anyone's heard of. Well, they've heard of him now, but he hasn't done a big body of work yet. Why am I going to fucking gift wrap him a title shot? You know what I mean? That's not my responsibility. I'm supposed to fight Masvidal. If Masvidal's dropped off, I want to fight for the belt next. I understand that mentality. I'm sure maybe the UFC feel a little different, and I understand theirs as well. But I understand from a selfish point of view why Leon would stick to his guns on that one. But Hamza wants to fight. And who fucking says I'll do it? Says I have no problem. Said I'll fucking go in there and fight this guy. None other than Gilbert Burns. Fucking what a gangster, man. What a fucking gangster. And what a great fight. Because, yes, we saw Hamza knock out Gerald Meerschaert. 17 seconds, first punch. You know? Doesn't necessarily mean that he can knock everyone out with one punch. Of course it doesn't. But wrestling-wise, Hamza is probably the better wrestler, probably the stronger guy. But do you want to take Gilbert Burns down to the fucking ground? Kamaru Usman used to train with him, and when they fought, he did not play that game at all.
Well, it's like, but there's a different kind of wrestling that guys like Khabib and Hamzat get into, right? Like, if I saw Hamzat pick a guy up, carry him in front of Dana White, screaming at him, and then suplex him and put him in a position where it's like, I don't care how much jiu-jitsu you have, right? If a guy is like on your back like that, pummeling you, right? Like, there's no... Like, there, I didn't see an escape for anybody, right? Like,
yes, there's escapes. Number one, Li Jingliang made some mistakes when it hit the ground to allow Hamzat to get to that position, you know? I'm just saying it would be interesting. It'd be interesting to see the approach, because if Hamzat doesn't want to take him down, then it will turn into a striking fight. And then we get to see what Hamzat's like on the feet. I know we've seen him, and I hear the reports about his training camps with Gustafsson at All Stars in Sweden. Supposed to be incredible, supposedly. You know, dominates Gustafsson, which is impressive. Gilbert Burns, as we know, he has knockout power in himself. No slouch on the feet these days either. Oh, yeah. I'm just saying, it's a fucking sensational fight, and I'm here for it. I can't wait.
I mean, I cannot wait for that fight. And that's one where it's like, okay, so what does Leon Edwards do? Because I haven't heard them say that they are preserving that booking, right? Everything that I've heard has been, you know, with Masvidal now out and Colby without an opponent, they're looking to book Colby and Jorge Masvidal for a season of The Ultimate Fighter, right?
I brought that down on my YouTube recently. I said, here's what they should do. Gilbert versus Hamzat, that replaces the Leon and Masvidal fight. They take Leon Edwards, he sits out to whenever Kamaru is ready, and he fights for the belt. And then you take Colby and fucking Masvidal. Those two hate one another. They used to live with each other, so they've got a lot of personal backstories. You know what I mean? They know one another. They're both great fighters. They both talk a lot of shit. And you put them together for 6 or 8 weeks on the set of The Ultimate Fighter. It's a crazy schedule, right? That kind of wears at your patience a little bit because it's nonstop. It's a lot of repetition, but it's a great opportunity. You put them in that environment. Colby talks a lot of shit. Masvidal is not afraid of that stuff either. I just think potentially on paper, that could be one of the best seasons of The Ultimate Fighter. Or certainly right now, two of the best choices for coaches you could find.
Who's the other two?
No, I'm just saying, no, the two of the best choices.
No, I mean, that people. To me...
Colby's one, Masvidal's two. You throw in the third person, that becomes three.
Okay, four. I get what you're saying.
You could go on all day.
I thought you meant that pairing is one of Infinity. The best two pairings. You know what I mean? That to me would be on the level of, for sure, John Jones versus Chael Sonnen. Like, that to me is the ultimate, like, it's the best ultimate fighter, right? That I was invested in every single bit of that. To me, Jorge Masvidal versus Colby Covington does deliver to that level. I guess my thing is, though, if they do get this Gilbert Burns versus Khamzat fight in at UFC 269 or UFC 270, if Gilbert Burns wins, yeah, it's the rankings are the rankings. But if Khamzat Chimaev can go out and do to Gilbert Burns what he's done to every other person that he's faced, he has to jump Leon Edwards for a title shot, no?
Hold on. If Khamzat beats Gilbert Burns, yeah.
No, if he obliterates Gilbert Burns, if he does the same thing to Gilbert Burns he's done to every other opponent he's had, he has to jump the line, no?
And that's always the danger. That's always the danger. I understand Leon's predicament. I understand his emotions and his intent and his reasons. I really do. But Dana said recently, talking about Carla Esparza. Carla Esparza said, no, I've earned my shot, in my opinion. I'm going to wait on the sidelines. Dana came back at the press conference and said, hey, I'm not a fan of that. I don't like that because you allow other people. Remember a while ago, me and Lewis were having a heated debate about fucking, who was it? Leon staying out and not fighting. And I said, well, then what if Vicente Luque comes in and batters someone and looks sensational and steals all that limelight? If you sit out on the sidelines, people forget. And if someone comes in like a Hamza, there's all people are talking about. You're absolutely right, Hamza. That is a situation. That is a possibility. Because if he goes out there in front of fucking 20,000 people at the T-Mobile Arena, steals all the headlines, he's all over ESPN, he's all over the fucking media everywhere, does another fucking Hamza-style performance, rocks the microphone, talks shit, maybe Usman's in the crowd, he's fucking finger-pointing him, they cut this fucking ridiculous promo, and there's poor old Leon Edwards standing there going, oh, those mates. When do I get my title shots? And they're like, yeah, bit of a, no, but mate, I've had fucking 9 wins in a row now. When do I get it? I sound like Paul McCartney. I don't know why that is, but this is how they talk in Birmingham. Maybe Leon doesn't, but you know, this is how they talk. Harrington, please don't lean in. I'm getting mics back. Don't lean in.
I see that. Yeah, I mean, So if Leon Edwards does sit this out and doesn't have another fight for this year, I think the overwhelming narrative of Leon Edwards 2021 is that he got a win against Nate Diaz that everybody remembers Nate Diaz being the most badass part of versus Khamzat, who, like, you know, took the time off, came in, massive win, you know, headline grabbing, gets another one by the end of the year. I mean, that momentum means something.
Yeah, no. It really does because... And then sadly, the other fight that Leon had this year was the no contest to Bilal Muhammad. You know what I mean?
Completely forgot about that. Completely forgot about that.
So it's like it was accidental. And he was, listen, I love Bilal. He's fucking great. What a guy. But Leon was dominating that fight, you know? And hey, you never know. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. Bilal could have turned it around. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying what we'd seen up until that moment looked like Leon was going to cruise to victory. But there was the eye poke. So it was an anticlimactic ending, right? Didn't get the finish that he wanted. And it leaves, you know, a fucking main event ended in the first round like that because of an eye poke, right? So that's like, it pisses people off, you know? And you don't leave that fight going, wow, what a knockout, what a fight. It's like, ugh, it's underwhelming. Then against Nate Diaz in a fight that he dominated, he gets clipped once. It's bullshit. But now the story's all about Nate Diaz, how tough he is. That's bullshit. That's a disservice to Leon. Leon smoked him. You don't go in the rain without getting wet. You know what I mean? You go into a fight with Nate Diaz, you're probably going to get clipped at some point. But still, you're right. If Hamza goes in, there's a potential. That's all I'm saying. A potential. You know?
Man, so. That's going to be such a good fight. I hope they do book that. Because like you said, nothing has been announced yet. There's no date for it. We don't even know where or when this will be happening. But that to me is, you know, that's got to be the most exciting fight you can put together at 170 right now, strictly for, you know, how tough Gilbert Burns is and how much of an unknown Khamzat Chimaev is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, let's just take a quick second to hear from Hemp Fusion. They've been supporting the podcast for a long time. And of course, I'm an ambassador for them as well. And that's because, listen, there's so many CBD brands out there. And I want to try and attach myself with the best brands possible. When it comes to CBD, that's what Hemp Fusion is. When you go to their website, they've got so many wellness products, CBD products, every time a form that you want it. They've got creams. The pain relief gel is absolutely phenomenal. I'm struggling with my neck right now. That really buys me some relief. Of course, they've got a variety of CBD products. The sleep support is absolutely fantastic. If you want a really good, well-rounded night's sleep and you want to wake up feeling fresh, then I strongly recommend the sleep support. The stress support helps as well because I'm still a bit of a stressy bastard. They have the energy support if you want to try and minimize your caffeine, level your body out, stay in homeostasis, and also have some extra energy. If you listen, I say it all the time. It's the best quality CBD on the market. The way they extract the CBD from the plant, they do it the long way, right? And it's more expensive doing that, but that ensures that they get the finest quality that is possible. You know, they don't cut corners. And of course, it's truly organic as well. So while you're taking your CBD to try and feel better, you're not taking in a bunch of unnecessary chemicals. So when it comes to CBD, Hemp Fusion is really the way you should go. And of course, we've got a promo code for you, which is COUNT. When you go to the website, hempfusion.com, use the code COUNT, 25% off and free shipping. So it's a very, very good deal. Listen, if you're on the market for CBD, this should be where you go. Hempfusion.com, the best CBD, great prices, truly organic, really good for you, and the shit works. There's a lot of garbage out there. Anyway, hempfusion.com, code is COUNT, 25% off. Let's get back into it. What have we got in the world of non-MMA? What's going on? What's at the top of your mind in your world right now, Harrington? Something. Don't do what you did in New York and just go, and you gave a terrible subject. What am I doing? I've got a movie out today. Never back down. Revolt comes out. It's available on digital download. You know, that type of thing. It's not going in the movie theaters. Direct download. Check it out. It's fun. It's great. I play a real motherfucker called Yannick. Never Back Down. Revolt. Basically, and I'm not giving away any spoilers. I'm a cunt. I don't like women. I beat people up. I beat women up. I abuse women. I torture them. I'm a real fucking asshole. Came quite easy. We got a little premiere thing on Friday. That should be fun. And then on Saturday, I fly back to the motherland. It's a bit of a nightmare because my family flies out on Thursday without me. Because I was hoping, you know, I'd go with my wife, go with my kids, you know, and then look like all nice, you know, dressed up. We don't get much of an opportunity to do that. But we had flights booked for Thursday. And when they organized the premiere, they called me up and said, Mike, we know you're busy. We want to do this at your convenience. You're one of the stars of the movie. You know, when can you make it? And I looked at my diary and I forgot about my trip to England. Totally forgot. I said, yeah, I'm free on that day. No problem. Then I went, oh, shit. And about 4 days later, I called back. I said, I'm going to England. I said, can we change that? He said, Mike, everything's booked in now. Everyone's told, we've hired the venue, we've done all that stuff, you know. We checked with you, you know, and I'm like, I know. So I tried to change my flights. Impossible with COVID right now. It's crazy, the amount of cancellations. So I couldn't change my flights. So they go on Thursday. I go to this thing on Friday. I have a little cheeky night out in LA. Hopefully don't miss my flight on the Saturday morning and go and join the family.
So you're sending an empty seat to England right now?
No. I canceled my flight. That took fucking 3 hours on the phone. It should not. Jesus. Oh, my God. Crazy. And then the following weekend when I'm in England, I'm DJing at a couple of nightclubs. Yeah. So if you're in the northwest of England, Saturday the 26th or the 27th, whichever is the Saturday, Mode Nightclub in Burnley. That is it's a town just over the hill from Clitheroe. And obviously, I haven't DJed in over 10 years. You're certainly not back in England. It's a different crowd. They're younger. I'm 42. They're all going to be about 18, 19, 20. And then check this. My wife and daughter are coming with me, which is going to be wild because, you know, there's going to be a lot of drugs being taken in that place. It's a rave. You know what I mean? There's going to be every type of, it's just that type of place, you know? And my wife's like, oh, I want to come because I met her when I was a DJ. So it's kind of like, you know, a little throwback and we just take
reminder why she's into you.
Yeah, exactly. I hope so. She forgot a long time ago. But then she's like, we'll bring Ellie because the legal age in England is 18. She's almost 19, you know? So we'll bring Ellie. I'm like, not sure I want to expose her to that. But then Rebecca's like, well, that's where we're from. And that's what people do there. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, she's in the big wide world now. You know, you can't shelter her forever. I'm like, yeah, but still, I'm not sure I want to bring her to a bloody nightclub full of bloody people off their minds, dancing like maniacs, probably having a great time, but still.
Sure. You know? But I mean, if there's enough guys on Molly, right? Like the close enough to your daughter, you're just going to have to fight someone at some point. You need to go into that DJ set fully prepared for that.
She's staying in the DJ booth the whole time. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. I've already arranged it. She's coming. They're staying in the DJ booth with Rebecca. And when I finish my set, in about 10 minutes, a car is going to turn up and take them home. But I'm going to stick around, party with the boys a little bit. But when I'm done with the set, it's like, all right, get the fuck out of here. Playtime for daddy now.
That's pretty sweet. I mean, you got to put in your appearance, you know.
Yeah, like, so on the Friday, I'm DJing at Electric Soup and nightclub in Workington. So if you're in that area, people of the UK, come and see us there. Shout out Johnny Donut, the owner and one of the DJs there. And then with DJ Cheese and all the guys on Saturday, I'll be in Mold in Burnley. There you go, DJ Mikey B. As soon as I finish on this podcast, I got to go up there. I got to get on the decks. Got to blow off the dust, get the fucking, you know, blow off the cobwebs, get the headphones on and figure out how to fucking do this shit again. It's been a while.
There's going to be a bunch of Instagram lives of you over the next couple of days just trying to work on, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a pretty good way to crowdsource. Like, yeah, do I have the mojo back to DJ?
Yeah. No, I'm going to go do a few mixes. No, I'm joking. It's like riding a bike. It really is. You never forget. It's like riding a bike. What are you doing? Well, we're going to be back with another show on Thursday. I was going to say, what are you doing on the weekend? But no need for that. Thank you all very much for sticking with the podcast. Of course, we know there's been some changes recently, but I feel like we're still going strong. We're going to go back to two shows a week just to, you know, so we can keep the energy high throughout two shows. If we were doing another hour now, it's a lot of mental stress. Don't get me wrong, we can do it. And we've got a lot of great guests. Darren Till's going to join us on Thursday. I believe Adam Hunter will also join us on Thursday as well. We've got a lot of guests planned in the pipeline. Anthony Smith is coming back soon. He was awesome. Renato Laranja, many, many, many guys coming on. Harrington, you have something to say?
I was going to say we have a couple of fan questions if you want to get into those at all. And I was going to tell people, if you want to send in those fan questions, head it over to bympod@gmail.com. We'll read the written questions. We much prefer video questions. So, you know, just take the risk, open up your iPhone camera and shoot us a quick video.
But we'd like to take a look at you as well. We want to see who you are. We want to judge you. We want to have a little bit of playful banter. If you do that, we'll talk about you a little bit more and the interaction will be more. And they're just jokes. You know what I mean? But no one wants us to sit here and kiss all your asses. So just be aware of that. Like if you've got a pair of shades on your head, I'll say, oh, nice shades, buddy. Real nice shades on your head. Hopefully you won't throw me off a fucking plane for it.
That should be. Look, if you are a true believer, please send in. I want like 7 video questions of guys with glasses on their head for next Monday. That would be super fun. If you do enjoy this program and you're watching it on YouTube or listening to it on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts, just hit that subscribe button, that follow button. Leave a rating, positive review. If you're on YouTube, hit that like button and leave a comment and click that notification bell so you know when new videos drop. In addition, if you like what you're hearing and don't like those pesky ads, head on over to GasDigitalNetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM, get yourself 7 days free, and check out over 20 great shows on the network. Brian, how are we doing on questions?
I got a question here from a Mr. Zaman Hussein.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say Roland Vixer. Zaman Hussein. What's up, brother? Take it away.
Hey, Mike. How's it going? My name is Zaman. From London. Massive fan. And so happy that BYM with Mike and Brian are going strong. Loving all your new content on YouTube with Brantendo as well. Killing it, mate. Okay, so my question is, which current fighter reminds you most of you from a fighting style perspective? And if your co-host is also an ex-fighter or a fighter, same question for them. All right, thanks.
Well, thank you, Zaman. I appreciate that. Shout out London in the house. We appreciate the support. I appreciate the kind words. Thank you, brother. And continue to watch the show. So what current fighter reminds me of myself? I hate to say it, but a lot of people bring up Sean Strickland because when I used to have the shaved head back in the day, and unfortunately, I'm not naming him, but the similarities don't end there in terms of our fighting styles. Like I was never a one-punch knockout guy. you know. So Sean's kind of like that, you know. He's more of a pressure volume guy and wears them down. What do you think, Harrington? You got any suggestions?
I mean, you know, the current, I think, number one in the middleweight division, Robert Whittaker springs to mind, right? Like, just the amount, like, because I always wanted to see that fight between you two, because it's two guys who are not afraid to, you know, eat two to give one, you know what I mean? Or whatever the case may be, right? Like, the neither man, I feel like, walks away from the octagon looking, you know, as well as they walked into it. But, you know, certainly volume, output, precision with the strikes. I that, to me, was always the most interesting fight I wanted to see you take on before the end of your career. So that, to me, springs to mind first.
You know, it's funny that you say Robert Whittaker, and I love Robert. I do. So what I'm about to say sounds like an insult at the beginning, but it's not. No, it's not. It's not. If you listen to it all the way through, it's kind of like that Dave Chappelle thing, because he got a lot of shit from the transgender community. They tried to cancel him. Did you watch that special?
Yeah. I thought it was funny.
It was fucking hilarious.
The jokes were really good.
In the middle, he's talking about transgender stuff, and you're like, oh, you know, I mean, they're jokes, to be fair, but I can see how you might get offended. But if you watch it to the end, then you clearly cannot get offended. He tells a very sad story about how one of his friends was a transgendered man that became a lady, and then because of their association, she started getting bullied, and then in the end, she killed herself. You know, it's you know, I feel like people don't give a fair crack at the whip. I don't know why I got into that, but still. Anyway, Robert Whittaker. So I fought Luke Rockhold for the first time in 2014. Did not go my way, as we know. I only had one eye, and I got headbutted in the other eye. Long story. But still, disclaimer. Now, we're in the locker room, and I think Robert Whittaker was going to fight Clint Hester, the headbuster. Remember him?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
So I believe he was on that Chael versus John Jones season.
Oh, right, the headbuster. Anyway, so, and he was warming up in the locker room, right? And he didn't look very good, right? And I'm fighting Luke Rockhold, you know, the former Strikeforce champ. He's killing everyone right now, you know. And fucking Jason Perillo, he's like wrapping my hands or something. He's like, and we're watching Robert warm up, right? And Jason's like, fucking hell, when are we going to get one of these guys? when are we going to get a guy like that that we could just go out and beat the fuck out of? Do you know what I mean? You're fighting the fucking best motherfuckers one after the other. Of course, I went out and got one arm guillotined, and he fucking knocked out his opponent, and then also went on to become a very dominant champion and one of the best fighters, pound for pound, in the whole division. You know what I mean? So, you never judge a book by its cover. And we were supposed to fight at UFC 193. Long story there. I had to have surgery, but prior to that, I was trying to find it's a long story. I'm not going to go into it. Private dark secrets about eyes and tests and why that might have been a problem. One day I shall reveal all. Thank you, Harrington. That's very kind, because Robert Whittaker, oh, what a guy. What a guy, what a fighter. Love everything about him, really do. What else we got, Brian?
All right. Well, you spoiled it before, but here we go.
I'm sorry.
It's all good. We got one from our favorite, Roland Vixer.
Roland Vixer. What's up, doggies?
Hello, King Ma. This is Roland Vixer from Germany. During ground and pound, did you ever aim for specific parts of the face, or did you just go bam, 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 and took whatever you could get? And if you had 10 free shots during ground and pound, like you would have against someone like Dylan Dennis, where would you land those 10 free shots? Where would it be most effective? Like nose, chin, eye? I don't know, but you can tell me for sure.
Well, Roland Vixer, I love when you send in the questions and the ground and pound. But if I was ground and pounding Dylan Dennis and I had 10 free shots, all 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 would be in the motherfucking dick. Simple as that. I will punch that guy in the fucking balls over and over and over and over until the referee stops me or that little cunt's fucking balls explode. And even then, I'd still go. What a little wanker.
I got 10. I'm using all 10.
All 10 to the dick, full force, elbows, stamps, pride style, stamping on the dick. Simple. Oh, God. Let me see. Good question. Did I ever aim specifically? I mean, when you ground and pound him and you sense a finish as well, it's hard. When you sense the finish, obviously the adrenaline goes and you're like, oh, fuck. And then sometimes when the referee's there standing over you, you know, sometimes they don't even need to be hard shots. So like when you're trying to hurt someone, you're trying to knock them out and you start, you're putting everything into it. You're really swinging the fucking shots. But when you know you've got them hurt and they're covering up, just shelling up. And basically that means they're fucking almost on the way out. And the referee's like, fight back. When you hear that, you don't give a fuck about the power anymore. You just volume, just fucking ball, go as fast as you can. Cause that looks bad to the referee. You know, so they stop it. But I remember one time, I just mentioned Jason Day a moment ago, actually. But when I fought in London, it was UFC 80, O2 Arena. I had a really good performance against Jason Day, showed my wrestling back then, took him down a few times, ground and pounded the shit out of him. But I remember I was inside control. He was kind of curled up on his back. And I was just wild. I was just dropping down elbows, right? And I wasn't really placing them. But he kind of curled up, and when I threw one elbow, the elbow landed flush to the back of his head. And when the elbow landed flush to the back of his head, I didn't aim for that, but when the elbow landed flush to the back of his head, the referee dives in, whoa, like that. And I have no idea, is the fight stopped or am I getting fucking disqualified? Do you know what I mean? And I'm standing there and I'm like, so ref, what's going on? Tell me. And he's like, what do you mean? You won the fight. I'm like, oh, fuck. Yeah, of course you did. Yeah. Sweet. Nice. So anyway, yeah, never really aimed the ground and pound. What about you, Harrington?
No, I mean, I cannot, you know, even pretend to think I know what I'm talking about here. But I did notice, you know, like I needed Diego to point out to me watching back in the fight that I had at Skankfest, where he's like, yeah, you drop your hands all the way to your hips to throw power shots when you like are feeling like in the thick of it, right? Like all your training just completely goes out the window because I 100% sense to finish at every moment in there. So it was just like wing as many as you can. I was wondering though, like what the specifically that question with the shots to the face, like is it more knockout inducive to the chin, to the nose? Like, do you want to impede their breathing? Do you want to hurt their vision? Like, you know, realistically, right? Like what is the target to aim for?
To be honest, you take what you can get. You know what I mean? Because a decent fighter will have their hands up. What you want to do, if you're on your back and you're trying to defend ground and pound, you want to control their biceps. Because if you hold their biceps, whenever they move their arms, you kind of just surf it and mirror their arms. So they can't throw it, because when they throw down, you kind of put a bit of resistance and it doesn't get you. So you like, wherever their arms go, you hold their biceps and follow. And then when they punch, your arm is... So if I've got their bicep, the other part of their arm's on the forearm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you just, there's a little tip for you. You just hold the biceps. It's not always that easy because they're trying to get your hand off their bicep, but that's what you do and you won't get punched in the face. Sure. But yeah, you're just taking what you fucking can, buddy. You're just fucking going for it. You're just trying to be a mean, nasty son of a bitch. I'm talking to mean, nasty sons of bitches. That's it. We're done. That's the show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for sticking with the podcast. We ain't going nowhere, babies. We got guests. We got co-hosts. We got stuff. We got cash prizes. We got giveaways. We got merchandise at bymmerch.com. We've got Harrington coming out of streaming from 1975 on a Spectrum ZX64. You don't know what that is, but it's a shit computer. Ladies and gentlemen, Brian McKay, B McKay is right, on Instagram. DM Harrington on Twitter and Instagram. Harrington?
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Just as a disclaimer, only some of the things Mike just said are true.
Which things? Stamping on dicks?
Yeah. I was just talking about the cash prizes and all that other stuff.
Oh, no cash prizes. Define cash. 5 cents. I'm sending it out to 20 lucky listeners. That's $1.
BYM coin.
Bimcoin. It's coming back. We got cash prizes. We got merchandise. We got Hall of Fame statues here. We're giving them out. We're giving them away. I've got too much memorabilia in the house. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
We got a shiny silver plaque.
We got a fucking silver plaque. We do. We got a 100,000 download subscriber thing. YouTube. Harrington, you're the man. A lot of fun today. Great job, my brother. Brian McKay, as always. Thank you, Brian. We'll be back with another show on Thursday. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Take care.